This episode is brought to you by Aura. That's O-U-R-A. The Aura Ring, from my perspective, is the single best wearable on the market. I use it to measure my sleep, activity, and readiness on a daily basis. I bought my Aura Ring several months ago before talking with the company's CEO on the podcast. I haven't taken it off since. I believe what gets measured gets managed. So if you care at all about your health, which you should, you have to measure your sleep in order to manage it. Aura measures much more than just my time in bed. It tracks my REM sleep versus deep sleep, my resting heart rate and heart rate variability, my temperature, my activity, and much, much more. For $299, you can get your own Aura Ring on AuraRing.com. That's O-U-R-A-R-I-N-G.com. AuraRing.com. Okay, let's get into it. Thank you so much, Danny, for taking the time and joining me on the show today. It's a pleasure to have you on this show after several months ago, having the opportunity to go on yours. We had a great conversation there and looking forward to the part two today. So for those who aren't familiar, you've got a really popular podcast, the Danny Miranda podcast. You write Tuesday Treasure, which is a newsletter that goes out extremely consistently. Everything you do, you're really consistent. You're focused on like self-improvement and generally a positive person and an optimist. So it's always great to get your content. For those who don't know you, you know, beyond the intro that I just gave, it would be great to sort of from your perspective, hear your story from as early as you're willing to start to where you are today and what you're doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a pleasure to be here as a fan of you and a fan of your show. My name is Danny. I am a 26-year-old podcaster, writer, who is actually currently looking for a job as we record this, but just someone who has been through some difficult times in my life and a lot of moments when I was doing things for external reasons. And over the past, I would call it 2 years, really starting in September of 2019, I've gone inward. I've become more disciplined. I've changed as a person to the point where my family calls me Danny 2.0, or they used to. Now it's just what they've become accustomed to. But the change started because of 75 Hard, this program where for 75 days straight, you take a progress picture, you do two workouts, one of them has to be outside, you follow a diet, you drink a gallon of water, and you read 10 pages of a nonfiction or self-help book. And the reason why I bring this program up is because once I started doing these habits every day for 75 days straight, I realized I was transformed. By the end of it, I was a different person. And it was in this time where I started to meditate. I started to do yoga for the first time and really release a lot of tension and identify a lot of tension from my life and understanding that the things I was doing were for external reasons. And when I started to shine that light inward and realize that I was whole, that I was capable of everything I needed to do, and that I shouldn't necessarily do things for other people and really focus on myself first, it was from that place where I was better able to serve others and serve the world. So that's a little bit about me, about my journey, and happy to go into whatever of that is interesting to you.
Yeah, sure. There's a few things that, and appreciate sort of the candor on sharing how you got to where you are now, Danny 2.0, as your parents called it. But you mentioned 75 Hard being the sort of the inflection point, or at least the beginning of that, and then getting to the end of that, and everything thereafter, it seems like has been, that was the beginning of the Danny 2.0 chapter, and maybe mm-hmm. your life has generally been different since starting that than it was before. I'm curious what inspired you to start that. Like, doing day one is always, in my opinion, it's usually a large chunk of the total work, is sort of the first day of work or the first day of committing to something. So I'm curious what led to that. And then what learnings from that process, like that discipline or whatever it was that led you on just a different path thereafter, even if it wasn't sticking with that same exact 75 hard program?
So a week before I started this program, I quit my job. It was a great paying job, and it was really an amazing opportunity, but I noticed that it didn't align with my soul. It didn't align with my purpose, and it was eating away at me for months. And it was causing me to gamble. I was causing myself to drink every night. But like, the job was tied to all those things. And I noticed that, and it really got under my skin. So when I quit a week later, I'm just looking online. I'm like, wow, this program looks really interesting. I did two workouts last week or a day last week. Like, I think I could do this. I think I could do this program. So, you know, I was already doing most of the habits, and I felt like this would be the perfect thing to do after I quit. And I saw it one night and I said, oh, I'm going to do this. And I started the next day. And you're so right. It's like, when we're in that position, it's easy to build up day one. Oh, I'll do it next week. Oh, I'll do it next month. This is the perfect thing for later. But I said to myself, okay, I'm just going to jump right into this and see what happens. And let's start day one tomorrow. And that was really big for me just to begin once I saw it. And once it hit me, like, this is for me at this point in my life. The thing that I really gained from it was the ability to do what I said I was going to do. Prior to doing this program, I would start an e-commerce store and I'd stop it the next week. I'd start this project and I'd be like, all right, that's cool. I'm not going to do it anymore. What would happen was the going would get tough and I would get going in a completely different direction. I was shying away from the difficult things, and this program helped me understand that the difficult things are actually what you're most proud of. On day 48 of 75 hard, the first time I did it, I remember just lying in bed at like 11 o'clock at night, knowing that I had one more workout to do, knowing that I could easily just go to sleep and no one would know that I didn't complete that workout. But I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to do this right now. And that feeling of day 48 completing that workout is like something that I still cherish to this day. So what you realize is you're most proud of the most difficult things you do. So why wouldn't you lean into the difficult things? That's the biggest takeaway I took from the whole program.
Yeah, that's an interesting takeaway. And I think a lot of people know the feeling well. It's like, there's so many things where it's just so easy to not, or so easy to give in to, you know, in this case, it was a non-action, like non-working out would have been so easy. And a lot of times it's a sort of bad action or like a vice action, like, you know, you told yourself you're not going to drink this week and you really want to drink on Wednesday night, or you told yourself you're going to eat healthy this day and there's you know, leftover fried chicken in the fridge or something like this. And it's always easy to give in, but you always feel worse when you do. And you always feel great if you actually sort of push through and do the thing. So I think that discipline, I mean, kudos to you for keeping it up for 75 days on the first try. Certainly doesn't sound like an easy set of items. I know even just the gallon of water, that's like one of the five items, is that's pretty challenging. Like I try to drink enough. I just felt like I was always dehydrated. So I started sort of measuring my water intake, and a gallon is a lot, and it's actually like pretty hard to do. But going back, I noticed something in your answer that, you know, I'm never afraid to get into the nitty gritty with you. I think you're just like a really transparent and open guy and an honest guy. You were saying like your old job, you know, caused you to do this, it caused you to do that. And then you switched and you started saying, you know, I was causing myself to do this, I was causing myself to do that. Is there something that sort of triggered in your head? Like, do you think about sort of blame or like taking accountability? What was going on there? Or was it like totally, you just didn't even notice?
Yeah, you hit it on the head. It was, I want to take accountability for my actions, because when I screw up, then I can be the one to correct it. If I'm giving away accountability to the job, that means that I myself am giving away that accountability and giving away that potential to change it. And the life is dependent on the job. It's like, but if I say, okay, no, I want to take responsibility for this, then that gives me power to control the situation in different ways. So that's exactly what happened in my head, was like, oh wait, I'm giving power to the job, but in reality, I want to give power to myself. So even when I'm doing something wrong, I want to take ownership of it, because then I can correct it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it takes a certain awareness that you've probably focused on building to even be able to sort of be just aware enough of like the language you're using and able to change it like mid-sentence like that. One of the things we were talking about before jumping on, you know, on the recording here is you had told me a while ago that you found it really useful to meditate prior to recording podcasts. And I told you every podcast almost I'm thinking, hey, you know, I'm rushing into the podcast, getting my final prep and whatever. And I'm like, Danny said, you got to meditate for 5 minutes before, and it helps. It's really great. And like, I could tell when you come onto the show, you're in such like a good headspace. So today I'm proud to say that I meditated before. I figured no better time than recording with you to do so. And it was really helpful. But I've never really gotten super into meditation. It's never really felt like it worked for me. Like, for example, running is great for me. Like, it puts me in a great headspace when I'm done. It's relaxing throughout. I mean, it's hard, but there's something about it. What has been your meditation practice that's, you know, how have you made it work for you? How has it developed over time or changed over time? And sort of what have you gained from it?
Yeah. So first of all, I appreciate you doing that, and I appreciate you giving me the credit for it. But in truth, the meditation practice started because my friend Tej Dosa, comedic bizman on Twitter, he was always talking about meditation, and he was always talking about how it benefited him in a positive way. So what happened with me was in September 2019, when I'm doing 75 hard for the first time, I'm saying, okay, I'm getting my house in order. I'm working out twice a day. I'm eating right. What's this thing that I've been putting off? And for me, it was meditation. I knew it was something that I should be doing, but I hadn't done it. And so for the first 90 days, I meditated. I have a kitchen timer, and I meditated for 20 minutes in the morning, first thing upon waking up. And, you know, during this 90 days, I'm saying to myself, meditation does not work for me. You know, I'm so in my own head, like this is kind of a waste. But interestingly, I noticed so many synchronicities, so many things, coincidences were happening during this time. And I don't know if it's from the meditation or not, but it's just interesting to note that when I started meditating, I also started noticing the coincidences of the world, maybe just because I was more aware. But what happened was after 90 days, I said to myself, you know, that was that helpful? Was that not? And I actually distinctly remember driving a car for the first time in 90 days. And I'm sitting there at the red light, and I could notice my body get agitated. And I said, wow, that's interesting. Your body's getting agitated. And I started laughing because that had happened every single time that I was driving and sitting at a red light and in traffic. And so it was like, that's what meditation gives me. It's that awareness of self. And I'm not perfect by any means, but I know that the awareness that I do have is a result of spending 20 minutes in the morning with myself. And it's like the practice has evolved where when I started, I was doing 20 minutes in the morning. Then after let's call it 6 months, I moved into 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. Then after another 3 months, I just did 60 minute sessions for probably 8 months straight. And now I'm back to doing 20 minutes in the morning. And the whole thing is like not judging myself. Oh, you're doing 20 minutes now. You were doing an hour 2 months ago. Like, what's wrong with you? It's like, well, I'm giving myself time. This is what the time that I need in this moment. So I think when people say that meditation doesn't work for them, I implore them to try 20 minutes in the morning for 9 days straight and not judge the results until 90 days is complete. The same way that working out is, you might go to the gym once a week for 4 different weeks and be like, well, working out doesn't work for me. And it's possible that it doesn't work for you, that that's not the best form of exercise that you're currently doing. But I would implore someone to try a program for 90 days and see if it actually works for them. And if you commit to it, it's very difficult for me to believe that it won't work. for you.
Yeah, or at least that it just won't be, you know, beneficial at the margin. I think a lot of people, maybe even myself included, sort of expect this, like, you know, huge, like, night and day thing. And I don't know who came up with, I forget the guy who came up with the term, like, 10% happier. I think that was from meditation.
Dan Harris.
Yeah, Dan Harris. Thank you. So I think sort of tempering expectations. And the other thing that I should probably do is try it for longer. There's both in terms of, like, individual sittings and time of commitment. It's an interesting thing when, like, so, you know, someone at some point a long time ago told me, like, all you need to do is 10 minutes a day and it's great. Like, you'll notice the benefit. So I sort of played with that for a while over the years on and off. And then more recently I was like, you know, the whole thing on, like, building a new habit is, like, start as easy and small as possible. So more recently I was trying even just, like, 5 minutes a day. And instead of, like, sitting up, just, like, lying down, making it, like, literally as easy as possible. But I think maybe doing it longer, like, you started with 20 minutes. You know, I've probably done hundreds of 5 or 10 minute meditations, but I could count the number of times I've done 20 minutes or more on one hand. So it's probably worth sort of taking that opportunity. I think it's funny, like, I thought the other day even of, like, you know, I walk a lot. I know you walk a lot as well. We could talk about walking if we want, but it was interesting. I thought, like, I've never spent a full day walking. You know, I've probably hit, like, 12 or 14 miles in a day on, like, a busy walking day in a new city or something like that when I was traveling or something. But I've never just gone out and, like, walked for a full day and been like, all right, that's the most I've ever walked in a day by far. And I think it would be interesting to do the same with meditation. Have you ever done, like, a really long one, or you've sort of, I mean, the hour is a long time. I've done that, like, once or twice. Have you experienced, like, the ultra long ones or topped out at an hour?
Yeah. So the closest I've come, first of all, with the walking the whole day, someone that has done that is Grant Talik. And I highly recommend you check him out. His whole thing is walking. And he walked from sunrise to sunset, I believe, twice now. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. So that's worth checking into. But in terms of the meditation all day, the closest I've come to it is doing a 5-day digital detox, 5-day digital retreat. No phones, no laptops, nothing. I was reading, so it wasn't like I was meditating for the entire day, but what I would do was I'd do an hour of meditation in the morning, an hour at night, and reading/journaling/walking in between. And I did this for 5 days. And the levels of insights I had about myself, about where I was going, it's like right before I created the podcast or started recording was this digital retreat, digital detox retreat. So it's like pretty crazy how the timing lined up like that. And I remember jotting down 100 guests that I'd love to have on the podcast. So it really did have a huge impact on me and something that I'd love to consider doing again. But just the change of environment, the slowing down your thoughts, not using clocks. Like I viewed that whole trip as one big meditation, and the insights that I got from it were to view myself in third person, so that I could remove the habits that I'd wanted to remove and increase the habits that I wanted to increase. And from that place, you can create whatever person, whatever human you want to. And it's a beautiful thing. So I recommend, I think I could have probably done it and got away with 3 days, because after the third or fourth day, I was like, I can't wait to get back into the world. Like, I'm so excited because I know what to change. I see myself in third person. But the first day, for 36 hours of it was really difficult. Like your mind expects notifications, your mind expects dopamine, and it's not getting it. And you witness that feeling, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had read, it's great that you brought this up. I had read about your sort of reflection on this 5-day retreat just earlier today and preparing for the conversation. And you sort of hinted at the two most interesting pieces that I sort of recall from, you know, not most interesting, but the things that I sort of had questions about, they sounded really interesting and wasn't exactly sure what you meant. So the first is, you said, like, I think it was day 4, you started to be able to, like, see your life in third person, and you just sort of mentioned that again and talked about how you can then sort of make the changes that you want to make. What does that process look like? Like, what is it, you know, you just wake up on day four and you have like a newfound perspective, or it's sort of like a gradual, like, oh, I'm doing this, and you start to be a little bit more objective about how you're spending your time? Because I like to think about sort of conscious life design myself and sort of have for a while. Is that what you're getting at here? What is this sort of, what was that process for you?
I don't know if it was something that I just woke up or it was a gradual thing. I was bringing a lot of, and I did bring a lot of journal entries from the past, I would say probably 3 years, of just writing down my thoughts. And so it might have been partly that I had been witnessing myself for so long that it was like, oh wow, like I see the mistakes you're making. But it was also, I remember it being more than just the journal entries. It was like the recent life, the things that I hadn't necessarily journaled about, where I could see myself and see myself going about my day and saying, oh wow, why do you do this here? Why not do this here instead? This would be more effective. That would be more effective. You might get more enjoyment out of life if you do this instead of that. And it really struck me and made a huge impact. And I remember just coming home with a sense of like, wow, I just looked at my life as if I was a friend to me and I could give me guidance on the things that I needed to do. It was a really weird experience, but I highly recommend that. I wish everyone has that experience, because you feel so optimistic about what is about to happen. And that also could be partly due to the books that I read during that time. But I think from talking to my friend Tej, that it's like a common theme of the optimism you get is from understanding yourself better and then knowing that you can change those things that you witnessed in that moment.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I definitely would like to take a comparable trip myself. It's again, it's just one of those things where like it only takes, you know, you said you could have done it with 3 days, it probably would have had a similar impact. These things, or whether it's, you know, meditating for 20 minutes a day, these things mostly do not take a long time. And I think people don't realize, myself included, how much time we spend sort of like just between things or doing nonsense or fiddling around on our phones, where if you just take a chunk of time and commit it to something like that, like you're going to remember those 5 days for probably the rest of your life, I imagine.
Forever. Forever.
Yeah. And you can just, you know, you can sign yourself up for that. It doesn't take anything. Like, you just rented a cabin and, mm-hmm. and went out and did it. But people don't. So hopefully, I'd like to carve out the time to do something like that myself in the next year. Or actually, I'll just go ahead and say I will do that in the next year. I'll do at least three days of a individual getaway, and you'll be the first to know how it goes.
I'm so looking forward to hearing how it goes for you, and let me know if you have any questions.
Yeah, no, I will. So that's cool and something to look forward to. 3 days is actually a long time. It's 1/100th of a year or so. So it's not nothing, but that's why I cut it down to three, because three is very doable. Five is totally doable as well, but you gotta, like, you know, take time out of your schedule or whatever. Like, three is a weekend and very doable. So I'm gonna make it happen. So let's see. We're talking about meditation. We're talking about sort of like self-improvement more broadly. Your sort of stated mission is to pursue the highest version of yourself. I imagine some of this stemmed from sort of that change you saw you were able to make in your own life beginning in September 2019, I believe it was. What has this mission like come to mean to you, come to represent to you? How are you going about pursuing it? And that all being pursuing the highest version of yourself.
To me, it means the world because of where I came from. And it's hard, right? Because it's like, there's no metrics associated with becoming the highest version of yourself. But at the same time, I feel like there's also this innate sense you get if you step back and you ask yourself that question, like, am I pursuing the highest version of myself? And you could say like, yeah, I really am. I'm hitting the gym. I'm improving in this area. Like, I'm getting better. I'm changing. I'm growing. Like, or you, the initial reaction might be like, no, I'm not. Like, I actually have this relationship I need to cut off. I have this situation I need to improve. I need to actually go into the gym. I need to start meditating. Like, everyone hears that question. Are you pursuing the highest version of yourself? And like, you have a gut reaction inside of you of like, yes, I am, or no, I'm not, or yes, I kind of am, but there's this thing I need to change. Like, you know, and that is what has guided me over the past 2 years, really. And I haven't been perfect every minute. Like, the answer to that question for me isn't always yes, but like, when it is yes, and when it has been yes for the last 2 years, I am a better person. My family is better because of it. My friends are better because of it. The people and conversations I have online are better because of it. So when looking at that, it's like, man, it really matters. Like, your impact really matters in this world. And when you get better, like, a real example of this was like watching my brother come home during quarantine and start doing 75 hard because he saw me doing it, which then led to his friends being like, wow, dude, you're looking great. Or our family being like, wow, Max, what are you doing? And it's from that place where he starts feeling more confident. He's approaching situations differently. It's my grandmother starting to meditate because she sees a change in me. It's her reading A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle because I recommend it to her. Like, it's little things like that, pursuing your highest version, and it really matters. So it's like this kind of fluffy pursuing your highest version thing, but like, when in practicality, you see the changes in people, oh man, it means the world to me. And I'm so grateful to be on this mission, and it really matters.
Yeah. I think it's this concept of whether you call it pursuing your highest version or sort of achieving your potential, general self-improvement, all of this, a lot of people are interested in it. And I think from what I've seen, you've been a large inspiration to a lot of people who sort of have this ambition, but either don't know how to get started or where to get started, or just want, you know, need someone, whether it's on Twitter or listening to podcasts, whatever it is, with your newsletter, just someone to sort of insert that like dose of that mentality every once in a while for them to sort of align themselves with and to keep them motivated. And myself included, like, I see your newsletter and it's just a quick little hit of, you know, let's get better today. And like, let's be positive. And it's a good thing. And I think it's contagious. And maybe that's what you're seeing from, you know, family to, I'm sure, people, you know, fans of the podcast and people on Twitter and the like. An interesting sort of balance that I think about a good deal is, and I think this relates to the point you were making, like, you can hit like, you're just in a really great place where, you know, you've been crushing your workouts and really disciplined with like being healthy and, you know, you're meditating, you're doing all that you want to do, and then you're continuing to do it. And like, you sort of hit this peak moment where like everything is just like amazing. And then inevitably, you know, peak moments are followed by like the downslope or whatever. You work your way up, and then, you know, inevitably there's like a bit of a down. And so you have to find it. You have to sort of like start working towards that next peak. How do you go through those times if you have them, where you're sort of like everything is great, and then you sort of become accustomed to that greatness, for lack of a better sort of way to say it, and, you know, you find yourself like wondering what's next, or maybe wanting more? Or is that sort of a foreign, does that not really resonate with you?
So this happened to me real bad in the sense that when I did 75 hard for the first time, I built up my self-image to the point where by the end of it, I was like, I could do anything. Like, I just completed this program, hardest thing I've ever done. And I did it for 75 days and I can do whatever I want. Like, the world is my oyster, basically. And so I took, you know, like 30, the rest of December was when I completed it. I was like drinking beers and like having a good time and like enjoying myself. And then by the time January and February rolled around, I was actually depressed for 6 weeks, where the reason was because I'd built up my self-image as someone who could get things done, who was disciplined, but then my actions weren't in line with that in mid-January to February. And I was like, oh my God, like this is crushing me to the point where I thought I could get this done, but now I can't. And like, I had this peak experience basically of like all my, everything was working, like you said, and like now it's not. And what I found as a form of, I was thankful to have quarantine happen because it offered a reset. It offered a big moment of time for me to say, okay, I can either use this time to get better or to get worse. And it's either going to get a lot worse for me because I'm already upset, or it's going to get better. And I have that choice right now. What I didn't realize was that I had that choice in January as well. I had that choice of becoming just a little bit better today in February, and every day in between. It's just like that choice is always available of today. What are you going to do today? You can't get overwhelmed by who you were at one point in your life or how much better you were in whatever area. It's like, what can you do today about this situation? And once I internalized that, it started because of chance, because of quarantine, and I just continued it on. And that was a big turning point for me of like not trying to get and try to be the person I was 6 months ago or try to be anything I wasn't, just try to be what I could do in this moment. And that was super helpful to not get overwhelmed by everything.
Right. And so how does this sort of, you know, you quit your job, you do the 75 days, you have this like down period, then you start sort of picking it up from there with the start of COVID being somewhat of a blessing in disguise for you personally. Like, you know, I'm consider myself very fortunate for COVID. You know, COVID wasn't really bad for me. It was great for similar reasons. And like, it's sort of odd to say that. And I of course appreciate that it's affected a lot of people so negatively, and arguably like net the world very negatively, but I don't think it's useful to anyone to, feel badly for, you know, if something affects others negatively but doesn't affect you negatively, you know, make the best of it. And if you can help people, but like there's no, you don't get any points for feeling bad about feeling good, if that makes sense. So I guess as all of this is, you know, your evolution is progressing, how are you simultaneously building your internet brand? Because, or whatever you might call it, like you started with a Twitter, then you started writing most recently, been very focused on the podcast and producing episodes like a machine, and it's awesome to watch. How did that parallel everything where, like you said earlier, you sort of, starting with the 75 hard program, I think you, one of the big things you said you learned was like, you know, unlike starting an e-commerce store and given up after a week or whatever, you started really sticking to what you said you were going to do. And that's very apparent, but I'm curious to know how all of this sort of intertwined.
Yeah. So in March, I would say March 15th, I started my internet brand. It was so funny to call it that, but it's the truth, really. I was writing under a different name when I was doing e-commerce. I put my name as Danny Roars, and that was what I would write under. And looking back, it was just obvious that I wasn't really proud of what I was doing at a deep level. I didn't know that because I never analyzed myself or really just gone inward. But if someone from school or someone I knew stumbled upon the profile that I created, Danny Roars, back in the e-commerce days, I was upset or ashamed, like for some reason. But when I'm writing now, and when I'm putting out content now, I'll have a buddy tell me, oh, wow, like I stumbled across your podcast, like, and I'm so grateful, whether or not they like it or don't, doesn't matter, because I want more people to discover it. This is my truth. When I was writing under Danny Roars, it really wasn't my truth, but I'd built up a little bit of a following of, I think, 7,000 or 6,000 people at that time, but I wasn't really talking about my truth. And so what happened was, I think I had 7,000 followers on Twitter on March 15th. I was talking about e-commerce stuff. And then I start talking about loving yourself, and I start talking about going inward, and I start talking about 75 hard. And for 3 months, my followers, I think, went from 7,000 to 6,000. And the whole time I'm just tweeting away my truth, because this is who I am. Like, this is the new version of myself. This is the real version of myself. So I just start writing tweets. At first, it's just tweets. Then it starts becoming newsletter. Then it's like, I want to talk to these people. Who are these 6,000, 7,000, whatever it is? Who are these people? Let me call them on the phone. This is before Twitter Spaces or anything like that. And I just started having great conversations. And people were like, man, that was the best conversation I've had in a long time. And I was like, me too. That was amazing. Why don't we record that? And so thinking about recording it eventually turned into the podcast. The podcast is now turned into the YouTube. And it's just like, it's funny how it all turns into something else that you can't predict before. But just following the intuition, following the where the joy is, has been really important for me building my internet brand.
Yeah. And I mean, you've done a great job with it, obviously. And I think I respect the fact that you sort of took this e-commerce brand, which didn't feel like you, and you pivoted to Danny 2.0 basically, and just started sharing freely from like a truer place. And that you just bit the bullet on like churning, you know, a piece of your audience and trusting that everything would work out. And I know you're well past that in followers on Twitter now. Not that that's like the only important metric or anything like that, but you've also had all of this that you've been able to build from it, from Tuesday Treasure to the podcast and now YouTube. And I know everyone's looking forward to seeing what you do next. I want to go into the podcast a little bit. We talked about it when you had me on your show, and I really enjoyed it. I always love talking with other people doing podcasts, because it's still a relatively new thing. I know it's like, it doesn't seem that way. It seems like everyone has a podcast now, but only anyone has really been doing it for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And in my opinion, they're still extremely undeveloped. Like what we're doing right now, just having a conversation, and I'll put some music at the beginning and at the end, and that's pretty much it. I think there's a lot to be done with like the audio format, and I'm always interested in hearing about people's experiences. I don't know if it was a tweet or in your newsletter at some point, I'd seen you sort of consolidated some of your learnings on how to do a great interview. So this is going to get a little bit meta, I guess, but I'm curious. I think Tim Ferriss, Larry King, and one other I can't recall, were some of the people that you learned from. And I'm curious to hear sort of some of the primary things that you think about, or some of the primary learnings that you've got from other great interviewers or from your own experience that have really helped you to develop in, you know, what I consider to be an art form of sorts, and certainly like a skill that you need to build over time.
Yeah. So for me, what I've developed and understood is personally how I'm able to separate myself is with incredible research. And at the same time, I need to become incredibly present. So balancing those two is actually an art form, in the sense of this is me talking to myself. You want to have such incredible research on that person that wows them and connects with them, but you also want to be able to say, okay, that research is great, but forget about that. You just said something interesting. The way you said, oh, I noticed how you corrected yourself mid-sentence. It's that. Like, that is what I am after. It's like the nuances of what someone's saying. And I want to be part researcher, part therapist, and just part listener and empathetic human being who's in the room with them. And I find when that happens, I get such connections at such a deep level because the person on the other end knows I've taken the time to research them. The person on the other end knows that I'm being present with them in this moment. And because of it, they end up saying, oh my God, like, how did you know that? Or wow, you connected with me on such a deep level. I really appreciate that. And it's like, that is the secret sauce I have to interviewing. And if I can do, I don't always do that, but when I do that well, I am on the top of my game and I really get such a high and such a kick out of that connection and forming that connection. And so that's a little bit from what I've learned from Larry King, which is like, always be present. Malcolm Gladwell says, like, how could you possibly know what the most interesting thing the other person's going to say is? And that is like, damn, that's good. And just Tim Ferriss for just like asking interesting questions in interesting ways. I mean, I have a whole document. I think I tweeted it and put it in my newsletter of like ways to interview well. And it's reviewing that document once a month has served me well.
Yeah. The balance that you mentioned of doing all the research and then sort of letting it go and focusing on what the other person's saying, it's so hard. And I think difficult to appreciate, like the listener at the end of the day, they just hear, you know, it all sort of blends in like, or, you know, rounds to the average or whatever you want to call it. I'll sometimes get off one and I'll be like, wow, that was great. Or conversely, I'll be like, oh my God, that was a brutal, like, I feel bad. I just feel like I did a poor job. And then I listen to them after the fact and inevitably they sound much closer to like the same level as like much closer than I would think. And I guess I have a more interesting question than the one I was just going to ask. What, looking back, like what comes to mind as one of the more interesting questions or one of your favorite moments from recording a podcast with, you know, from any of your 100 plus guests at this point? What's, doesn't need to be the best moment or anything, and it's a lot of pressure, but what is one really interesting sort of moment that comes to mind for you?
I mean, the one that just pops out right away is when I'm talking to Gary Vaynerchuk and he's like, oh my God, that's you. Meaning like he remembered in that moment of a story and our connection from 10 years ago. And just his face, I've probably replayed it like at least 10 times of like, you know, like, oh my God, that's you. And I practiced the introduction, I want to say like 30 times in the shower, in the mirror, whatever, just like drilling it into my head. And I still don't think I nailed it exactly how I would say it today, or like, I still think it could have been better, but just the way he reacted in that moment was like, man, we have a connection that's special. And if anyone wants to know what I'm talking about, you can check out episode 39 of the Danny Miranda podcast.
That's great. And that is a great cliffhanger and prompt to go listen. That was super smooth. I didn't see it coming myself, but then when I heard it, I was like, wow, that's pretty good. All right. So I know we're coming up on the scheduled time. One other sort of interesting road I want to go down, because I was, again, you know, we have a lot in common, partly what makes for great conversation, I think, and some differences too. But you mentioned at the top of the show that you're actually looking for a job. And that I had seen that, you know, come before you said it, I had seen it sort of like looking at, I think you'd put it in a newsletter recently, or at least I'd seen it on Twitter. And I know that there was like a great response to you being public about that. I'm curious, sort of two pieces. One is realizing that you wanted to get a job. How did that sort of come about? And for me personally, I know, you know, it seems easy to not have a job because you don't have to get up and go to work and whatever. But guys like you and I, it's not like we're not working. We're working hard on whatever we want to do, whether it's the podcast or working out and working on ourselves, whatever it is. So it's not like you're not working. And then separately, you you have to deal with sort of the, what I'd say maybe like the burden or the challenge of being different. I think the reward is worth the burden for me personally, but it's a burden nonetheless. So I'm curious how you got to this point where you're now looking for a job and where you are now. You know, what came of making that public, and how do you think this is going to sort of, I'm not going to ask you how it's going to unfold, but is this a new chapter for you that's about to begin?
I think, you know, new chapter is probably the truth of it. Although it's like you have this idea in your head of what's going to unfold, how it's going to unfold. And right now I have some opportunities right now. I can't speak about, unfortunately, but they're incredible opportunities, man. And it just happens because I put myself out there, because I put content out, because I'm making connections with people. And I'm so grateful for that. But I want to ask you about what you meant by burden. You mentioned being working for yourself or being alone is a burden, and a burden you're willing to take. What do you mean by that? Could you expand on that?
Yeah, sure. So I think that for me personally, I'm not going to generalize to say this applies to everyone, but I get a lot of happiness and just sort of that deep sense of you're doing what you're supposed to be doing from doing things a little bit differently. It started by taking a gap year when I was in college and seeing all my friends go on to be, you know, at the time their sophomore year of school. And I had sort of dropped out and was trying to start a company and just doing something very different than 95, 99% of the people that I knew, and got just a real sense of like life from that, and just like really felt alive. And I think that's what came back 5 or 6 years later when I quit my job and started down doing the blog and doing the podcast and everything like that. Again, you know, not that many people, most of the people I know work for someone, right? And quitting to, first of all, quitting and everyone at work saying, well, oh, what are you doing next? You got a new job? And me saying, no, I actually don't know what I'm going to do next. That's different to begin with. And then going and actually doing that and persisting along that route and that ambiguous sort of unknown for what ended up being, you know, well over a year, year and a half, coming upon 2 years now that I've since I quit. It's just, I think there's, it feels like the right way for me personally to be, but it's not without its set of challenges. And so that's what I, maybe burden's not the right word, but it's hard not to compare yourself with people. Of course. And of course, you know, I know that I shouldn't be, but I think everyone to varying degrees does. And I think I'm actually fortunately, like I think I've worked at not doing that a ton, but nonetheless, I do it. And so every once in a while, I have this moment of doubt where it's like, okay, everything feels great, but right now it doesn't. Right now I'm thinking, why can't I just be regular? Why can't I just not regular, you know, but why can't I just go get a job and like, shut up, you know, just like do the easy thing, which in truth is not that easy for me, because it comes with that sort of feeling like you described at your job before you quit, where like you're not directly on the right line. And of course, not all jobs that are this way. But doing something less than something that you're really excited about, I think is that way. And so there's this trade-off. But I guess when I was talking about burden, it's the collective of those moments of doubt along the way where you're generally enjoying what you're doing that's different, but moments flare up here and there where it can be a challenge. And I'm curious if this was an accumulation of some of those moments that made you realize it's time to make a change. Because at the end of the day, I think there is something to be said for generally building sort of a diverse set of experiences in life. I think that's, for me personally, something that I want to do in the long haul. Or if it was just, you know, hey, I want to go and make some more money for these next 5 years or whatever it is. So I guess, I don't know. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. So for me, what it was. The job was, and e-commerce in general for me, was trying to be different for the sake of being different. And I noticed that because I look back on one of my Instagram stories. Like I think about this so vividly of like, wow, I've really changed. I'm a different person. But I remember posting an Instagram story in San Diego, like, fuck your 9 to 5, with like a view of the ocean, you know, like, and just like, I would never do that today. But two, it's just so obvious that like what I was trying to do was like make myself better than someone else because of a job or because of like what I was doing on the day to day. And it, looking back, it just, that was, I was doing things for the external. I was doing things for other people. But not everyone who takes that path of entrepreneurship and everyone goes down that route is doing it for external means, obviously. But personally, looking back, I clearly was. I wasn't aligning with an actual purpose. I was aligning just to try to feel like I was better than other people. So I think that's something to be wary of, just for anyone listening, is like, are you doing things for other people? Are you doing them for yourself? Is it some combination? Probably, but like, see where that combination is leaning towards in this given moment.
Yeah, well, I'm very much looking forward to seeing where you land, and all the people who have been paying attention well enough to reach out with an opportunity, I'm sure will be thrilled to have you. I want to wrap up here with a final question, maybe related, maybe not, but you tweeted recently, it was your birthday earlier or last month in July. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, you just turned 26. I know your last few birthdays have stood out in that each time you sort of, it's not on the birthday necessarily, but you've sort of started something every year for the last few years. And maybe the answer is easy. Maybe it's just the job. But I'm curious what's in store for this year. If you had to guess, what could you see coming?
Oh man, it's going to be cool looking back on this in 3 years or 5 years or 10 when we actually know the answer. But I would say probably something to do with money in some regards, whether that's a job that is NFTs, which we didn't talk about, or something to do with money. I feel like it's the year of money and making money for me. And that is probably aided by the fact that I'm currently living in New York City, which is probably the most, or one of the most expensive cities in the world. And as Paul Graham says to you, it whispers, make more money. And I have felt that whisper for the past 2 weeks as I've lived here. So if I had to guess, it would probably be something to do with making more money. But I guess really time will tell, and we shall see.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to reflecting like you in a few years, and hopefully this is the year of money. So thank you again, Danny, for coming on and sharing the time. It's always great talking with you. Where do you want to point people to go follow up and learn more of the podcast, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. Would love to end by pointing people to the appropriate places to go and follow your journey from here on forward.
It's at Hey Danny Miranda on Twitter, on Instagram, and maybe on TikTok soon. Who knows? But it is a pleasure to be here. I have a podcast, Danny Miranda Podcast. If you enjoyed what I had to say or want to hear me asking other people, maybe Jake, questions, you can check that out. And I'm just really grateful to be here and to have this conversation. It was a great one, and I'm grateful for your questions and your thoughtful approach and your peace and presence during this conversation.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you, Danny. I appreciate it. And it sounds like it might be not just the year of money, but maybe the year of TikTok as well. I'm excited about that little Easter egg there, but thank you again. And looking forward to the next one.